Oh my God, I play a role in these results.
Yes, this is a direct result of something that yes. I did.
Yes.
I ate dinner and then crashed.
Yes.
And I didn't sleep well that night. And that's my fault.
Yes. And yes. Which is so empowering at the same time. Because even though it kind of sucks to be like, oh, geez. At the same time, you're like, wow, wait a minute. Now I
can control this.
Yes, exactly.
This doesn't just happen to me. I'm not just a bad sleeper.
Gut stuff, butt stuff. What's up down there? He's going downtown when you know you've got brown streaks in your underwear. And just when you try to take the matter into your own hands, the bloating and the cramping come along and say they've got different plans. What's up down there?
This show may contain some curse words and descriptive and detailed talk about poop and sex. So you may want to listen with headphones around children or coworkers. And now, on to the show.
Hey there, welcome to What's Up Down There. I'm Lori Seeley, functional medicine health coach. My guest for this week is Molly McLaughlin. She is the creator of Sleep is a Skill, a company that optimizes how people sleep through a unique blend of technology, accountability, and behavioral change. The company was born from scratching her own itch after a lifetime of poor sleep habits culminated into a mega challenging bout of insomnia for months without end. With a background in psychology and human behavior, she went down the rabbit hole to solve her own sleep disturbances without sleeping aids. She became fascinated with chronobiology and, by extension, its practical applications to restore a state of homeostasis, not only to her sleep, but also to her life as a whole. Knowing the difference between a life with sleep and without, she has now dedicated her life to sharing the forgotten skill set of sleep. I'm excited to talk with Molly today, and without further ado, here we go. Molly McLaughlin, thank you so much for coming and talking with me today. We're on Zoom. Thank you so much for walking to your microphone and joining me on
my workout
podcast.
Clothes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Oh, hey, let's hear it for COVID-19.
Oh Lord. What a soundbite.
That's going to be it.
That's a tweetable.
That's the name of the podcast episode. Let's hear it for COVID-19. That's all. Oh my God. I'm almost so sick of this COVID-19 shit that I don't even talk about it anymore. Like, that's the first we even brought it up since we were talking, right? We were talking for 20 minutes already.
Totally. Absolutely. I know.
So crazy. When is this shit going to be over with? You know what? My daughter just heard that she's doesn't have school for the rest of school year.
Wow.
She's in fourth grade and we just moved here in August. So it's her first year at this school and she was just getting to be comfortable with the other kids and boom, like spring break, nothing. After that, nothing.
What?
And she's
where are you guys in now?
We're in Orlando.
Orlando.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Got
so
it.
She gets her one day a week at 9:30 on Monday. She gets to see her other classmates on Zoom and that's it. And then she talks with her teachers on Zoom separately and does homework, like does all these assignments. She's like, I'm doing my homework in my pajamas, but I miss my friends.
Oh,
like good and bad.
Yes, you're going to have to, I guess, play therapist in addition to a teacher and a friend and all the things. So many hats for you.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. So, Molly, let's get into your stuff. Yeah. So, I want to hear your story because I know that it's interesting. You had a time with insomnia and all this stuff. Explain.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, thank you for that. So this whole company, Sleep is a Skill, was born out of my own problem with sleep. And how it all went down was that for many, many years, I was, you know, a night owl and an entrepreneur, so I could make my own schedule. So I was super justified about it and righteous and was like, oh, you know, that's how it is for me. No big deal. Thought it really wasn't a big deal. And it went like that for many years. And, you know, I would get more extreme in my tendencies. I'd be going to bed. There'd be times when the sun was rising. I'm just going to bed. Like that was my life looked like. Real mismatch of this concept of circadian rhythm. So, and then Without really connecting the dots, I was getting sick more regularly. I had, you know, issues of an ulcer, the beginnings of an ulcer, and gastritis, you know, so I was having those things that really pointed to that something was not working in my life. Lots of stress, lots of kind of burning the candle at both ends. So that's how it began. Then when I began to start traveling, so my boyfriend and I began becoming essentially digital nomads. So taking our businesses on the road, and we kind of dipped our toes in the water on that and started traveling. And when adding jet lag and time zone change, and also just the stress of bringing businesses and, you know, being responsible for employees and all of that on the road, that's when my sleep really started to tank. And so what it looked like was my first real bout of insomnia. And what would happen was I would be going to sleep, and, you know, as bedtime was like approaching, then I would be getting so stressed. So that cortisol was all out of whack. And so I'd be having that rise in cortisol at night versus when you want it to be really building up in the morning. So I was really at odds with my circadian rhythm and the rhythms of nature. So that obsessive nature that I've known myself to be for so many years, you know, while that was probably part of my problem with the rumination and, you know, kind of a hyper aroused state, that inability to turn off my brain when I would go to bed, thankfully it ended up kind of being my saving grace of going down the rabbit hole on this topic of sleep and becoming crazy fascinated with what is, what there is to know around this conversation. First with chronobiology, the science of time as it relates to our health and the functionality of our bodies, and also in alignment with that, with this understanding of our circadian rhythm and that we are diurnal creatures and basically we are meant to be more active during the sleep at night. You know, which as I spoke to was exactly the antithesis of how I had been living my life for so many years. So that really took something to start shifting all of that, but to understand all of the influencing factors that impact not only your sleep, but then as I discovered too, just your psychology and the overall health and well-being of yourself as you start to really hone in some of these things was mind-blowing. So how it all began was then once I started kind of healing my sleep and bringing back, you know, a level of homeostasis, then I started just talking to other people that were also having troubles with their sleep. And that's how it was all born, was from a place of, okay, you know, what can we do to begin to educate from a place of this circadian rhythm entrainment, which is a concept around how to basically bring your circadian rhythm back in alignment. So that's really where it all came and stemmed from. So essentially what was so great about then shifting from my own issues around my own sleep and then transitioning to begin to work with other people on their sleep issues. One, the level of empathy and understanding was at a whole other level because I had been there. I knew how, you know, it was a draw the line in the sand. You know, kind of period in my life of what needed to shift and the importance of all this and just how challenging it can be when you just aren't getting sleep. You know, one of the big takeaways is without sleep, nothing works was really my sentiment in my life. And then bringing that to other people's lives just was so fulfilling. So it began organically and then it expanded into small group things and then started an online training course. So we have course work that we do. We'll get sleep bots. So they get a whole kind of rundown each day of, you know, how their sleep went the night before based on, you know, kind of some of the work that we're doing and then planning their day from a circadian rhythm entrainment perspective. So we do all those things and then also started a, you know, podcast on sleep as well. So this whole world got created, you know, out of really my own problem with my own sleep. It's really how it came to be.
I love that. That's everyone that I have on the podcast. They all have this story that's like, yes, and then I suffered with exactly what I'm helping my clients with. And I think that totally helps. I think like whatever you believe in, the universe, God, Allah, I don't care, whatever that is, helps to do those things with us. You know, that's, you know, it's part of you moving in the world in a good way for other people, you know? that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Yes, I get that. Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, you come to teach what you most need to learn, you know, kind of that whole conversation. It's just been wonderful because then now we get to get in the weeds on, you know, bringing in technology into the conversation. So really we can quantifiably see improvements in how our behavior really has a say in how we sleep. And so that's why I'm so committed to this, you know, concept of, that's what I call the company, Sleep is a Skill, because it really kind of turns the paradigm, or it's a paradigm shift for so many people, because many come from this place of, well, I'm just a bad sleeper, or that's how it's always been, and the resignation that comes from that. Whereas adopting the perspective that this really is a skill set, then it's learnable. Then, you know, wherever we are, we can up level. And then when we start adding in different kind of elements around data, so getting that biofeedback in to really understand where we're falling right now and what our goals are, then it can help make a difference in all the behaviors necessary to improve our sleep, because it really becomes a very dynamic area because it's so insidious and there's so many other areas that it takes really shifting in order to improve this. So I actually call it the Trojan horse effect when you begin looking at your sleep, because then all these other things that you kind of maybe weren't dealing with or hadn't looked at for, you know, it's growing cobwebs and all those areas of life, then you have to dust it all off and, you know, really go to work on it. And so part of the philosophy is looking at, in order to win the nights, you have to really win your days.
Yeah.
And that's also grounded in, that's like one psychological perspective, but then there's also grounded in this circadian rhythm entrainment of the importance of even just light dark relationship. And then also another part on the rung of circadian rhythm entrainment is temperature. So some of those, you know, things are surprisingly impactful at when we get tired, when we wake up, and that we actually feel rejuvenated. So both the quantity and the quality of our sleep gets impacted very heavily by this light dark process and then this temperature process that so many people, you know, maybe they have an inkling of it or what have you, but when they really get into the doing of it, then it can be transformative. Just there's a lot there. So it's an exciting area to take on.
Gosh, there's so many questions I want to ask you, and I just don't even know where to start. So I think I'm going to start with the temperature thing as it relates to circadian rhythm.
Sure.
So, because I've heard a lot of different things and I want to hear yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So for temperature, it's second on the rung. So most important being, you know, that light dark cycle, but underneath that, temperature is another big cue. So almost if we go, because, you know, Edison is, you know, a big marker in our timeline of expanding the length of our days once we were able to have a full light. So before that period, you know, if we go back even to like hunter-gatherer days when we would be much more accustomed to living outside, what you would see is that the temperature of your environment would be dynamic. It wouldn't be static like we experience now as kind of like indoor zoo animals that we kind of have become, you know, because largely the stats are around like at least around 90% of our days for most people in westernized, you know, environments are spending their days inside. Yes. So, and largely, you know, probably on a timely manner with this lockdown, it's likely far more than that. So if that's the case, then we aren't experiencing that dynamic nature to our external temperatures that we used to have. So what that used to look like is in the morning, the sun would rise, and as the sun would rise and the environment would get warmer, and that warmth, in addition to the light cue, the temperature cue would also say, okay, cortisol release, which is actually really important. And we love that if it's done at the right times and the right amounts. So that would be like our natural coffee. We take on the day, we're active, we're moving, we're hunting, we're gathering or whatever. And then from that place, we're very active and our body temperature reflects that. So the graph that we would see of our body temperature would be this nice arc throughout the day, and it would really warm up, and it would align with the outdoor environment. And then when sun would set, then it would be a marked reduction in external temperature. And so when that would happen, then that would be yet another cue that would say, okay, so we're gearing up here for melatonin production. And melatonin is known as the hormone of darkness. And often where there's darkness, there's often, it can be cooler than it maybe was earlier in the day. So what we can do in our modern day living environments is that we can try to mimic some of what that would have looked like. Well, one, we can try to get outside. So that's really an important factor. But, you know, maybe with the lockdown or what have you, or, you know, sickness or different issues, then even mimicking if you have control of your temperature. I really foresee this being part of, you know, the future for some of these smart to have the circadian rhythm temperature settings so that it's, you know, warmer during the day and drops down as, you know, in alignment with sunset. But then, you know, so you can do some of those external things. And there's also things that affect our temperature that we might not think of as readily. Of course, exercise, you know, being maybe the first one we think of, and just being a bit more mindful about where we put our exercise and the types of exercise, because, you know, that can heat up the body. But then also meal timing is a big one that will heat up the body too. And that's a tricky one that so many of us don't often think much of, eating later in the day and how that can really affect our sleep. And so for those people that are tracking their sleep, I'm sure they've, you know, come to know this, that, you know, basically every client I work with has at least like the Oura ring. So like this guy, and that will track their sleep. So track their body temperature while sleeping, their respiratory rate while sleeping, their heart rate, their HRV, their sleep time duration, you know, wake up times, all of that stuff. So what they'll see is if they eat late, then it can really warm up the body. Alcohol, another big one that does that. And, you know, that will impact the type of sleep that you have also, so that your temperature is really aligned with the architecture of your sleep. So, you know, going into that along with, you know, because the temperature does impact that, a healthy kind of, you know, model sleep architecture would look like a big grouping of slow wave sleep, so deep sleep in the first half of the night, and then a slow, you know, cyclical nature, but then a slow shift over to a heavier ratio of REM sleep. And that's usually more in the early morning hours. But of course, again, if we go back to this hunter-gatherer days, in the early morning hours, it's slowly getting a little bit warmer, a little bit warmer. And so that temperature can arguably impact some of the those sleep stages that you're hanging out in more. So if you're a bit too warmed up, if you drank, if you ate late, you know, all the things that we might do and go to bed later, then that can all throw off the type of sleep that we're getting. So those things become really important if we're looking to up level and just feel awesome. Above all of this is really consistency too. So, yeah, you know, the sleep loves consistency, and it's really challenging in a modern day environment because, barring, you know, this extra special time with, you know, what we're dealing with COVID, normally what we see is that 5 days or so out of the week, maybe people try to be largely consistent, and then the weekend comes or what have you, and then
throws you off completely.
And it's really, it actually, you know, has a name now of social jet lag. And so social jet lag is kind of the self-created jet lag that, you know, suddenly we've gone to bed, 3-4 hours later than we might normally, depending on your age bracket or what you're up to. So then what you're dealing with is now you've been thrown off on your schedule, and it's akin to going from whatever, New York to California or something to that nature, and the impact that that has. And then in addition, it can bring about what's called metabolic jet lag. And so metabolic jet lag is now your meal timing is most likely thrown off as well because of that change in your rhythm. And so all of those things really confuse the functionality of the body, because there's a main, basically it's known as the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And that is kind of the master time clock in your brain that keeps, as like a master choreographer, to keep all these other clocks that are in virtually every single cell in your body on time. And there's a design for each, you know, element of the, so the liver has a particular bedtime, and the liver has a particular wake time, and, you know, and the same thing for all of these other processes throughout the body. And it,
because
wants
they work
to,
together.
They work
right?
together. Exactly. You know, and so when it's in harmony, it's beautiful. And it's just like it's so amazing. Cause this, for me, again, going back to like the fact that I did everything the opposite of this for so much of my life. So now, living a life where like I actually get consistently tired around the same time each night, I consistently wake up around the same time each morning, all of these things, you know, align with like sunrise and sunset and all this. I mean, this was like not even fathomable for me for so many years. So to have that experience, it feels incredible. And, you know, so you want to cultivate that once you see, for me and for so many of my clients, once you get a taste of that for an extended period of time, you're like, well, why would I want to live my life any other way? It feels so good.
You know, probably people listening to this are just having a lot of light bulbs going on, you know, like whenever I don't get a good night's sleep, I don't shit in the morning, you know, because normally like when I sleep, when I just really sleep, I wake up and boop, it's just like automatic. And when I don't sleep well, when I know that I have a plane to catch, or when I just like sometimes my boyfriend is just, you know, rattling around too much or something like that. And then I don't sleep as well. And then the next day it's like, when am I going to shit? When is this happening? And you just know it's not like that. And that's, for me, that's the clue that my body is working wrong. Like it's not happening right. And the trigger for that was that I didn't sleep well. And that's not even circadian rhythm, because I'll go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time, but I haven't slept, you know? So I think, yes, I think that has something to do with the circadian rhythm, because I'm not actually sleeping. I'm just laying there trying to, you know, and then I get up and I can't poop, and nothing else works then for the rest of the day. And what you were saying before about, you know, the weekend stuff, the social jet lag. Oh my gosh, I can remember so many weekends, especially, I mean, it happens less and less lately because I don't go out because I'm an old fogey. But like when I was when I was in college, you know, like Saturdays and Sundays were bed days. And I would just I would finally get my energy back to go out at night and do it all again. You know?
Yes.
So you 100%. Stay, you close the bars. You have some Taco Bell and you crash. That's the worst thing you can ever do, right? That's the worst thing you can do for your body and your sleep cycle. And when you're young like that, you're doing it all the time. You're like, I can do this. But no. I felt it the next day. I know that I felt dry. I felt the hungover feelings. And now I don't even have to drink to feel hungover. If I stay up too late.
So well said. Mm-hmm.
If I stay up too late, I am hungover the next day. There doesn't have to be any alcohol involved at all.
Yes, 100%. And actually, you're pointing to so many, oh my God, so many gems. So one, so my boyfriend and I have been fully, you know, digital nomads, location independent for a bunch of years now. And so one of the things that we would notice was, you know, when we would be traveling 12 time zones and suddenly you're taking on for your body, switching completely when you're going to bed and when you're waking up, they're just flip-flopped. Yes. So, you know, when you're dealing with that, you would be, instead of waking up and going to take a shit, basically, then instead of doing that, it would be when you were going to sleep and, or during your sleep cycle. And all of those things can be really, really confusing, problematic. And, you know, to your point, they can actually be a great marker of, as you're getting over your jet lag, as you're kind of shifting that jet lag or that time.
Yeah. When you start
when you start to bring it back, you're like, okay, I've made it. I'm back. And that's actually one of the really great ways of noticing that. So it's because, you know, one right now it's the suggested kind of barometer to how long it takes to shift a time zone is, or the rule of thumb at the moment is 1 day for every time zone. Mm-hmm. So for us, when shifting 12, then it's a 12-day situation. And that's that's the type of weight that we want to provide for ourselves when we shift our own schedule so much, because, you know, if there is that change to your point on like the weekends and, you know, if we go to bed so much later or we Netflix binge some series or all these things that we might do innocently enough, it is akin to that changing of a time zone or two or three or four and all the impacts that happens, including, you know, what stools are going to look like and when. So,
oh yeah, that's the other thing. Like when I do poop on those days, it's tiny little hard balls because it took so long to come out. So I'm constipated too.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And that's every a big time. Deal. You know, And also, you know, there's so many things. And then people have like magnesium issues often that aren't, you know, getting the type of sleep that they want or mm-hmm. need, and stress and all those sort of things that impact what you're pointing to. Yeah. So sleep and stools, we can SNS, really yeah. go hand in hand.
Okay. Now that's the name of the recording. Sleep and stool. Yeah. I need to know about this. Okay. So okay. What is glymphatic drainage? And tell me all about how it relates to sleep, because what is that? I never heard of it before. I feel stupid.
Yeah. It's very interesting because it's really newer for many people on a mass audience level to even be hearing about this term or thinking about this term and the link up that it has with sleep. So we're all likely familiar with lymphatic drainage, and glymphatic drainage is a kind of newer understanding, particularly in the mass audience, of what happens at night during slow wave sleep. And essentially it has to do with, so the cellular waste that gets accumulated each day in the brain, what is super important that we didn't really understand until recently was that each evening during that deep sleep, the brain sort of shrinks down to a smaller scale. And then during that process, then basically this fluid can go through and flush out, very like janitorial process to flush out this waste. Now, why that's even important, why do we care about that, is that part of the link up that we've been able to discover is that when that doesn't happen, there can be a buildup of basically this protein, this amyloid beta. And amyloid beta, when it gets hardened, it's this plaque-like substance. So when you compare the brains of someone dealing with, you know, late-stage Alzheimer's and then sleep-deprived brains, one of the things that they have in common is this inordinate amount of amyloid beta plaque. What's concerning about that is, wow, is there a correlation? And it looks at the number of studies, the magnitude of this sense that these things are coupled, the sleep deprivation and chronic sleep deprivation, and the link up of instances of things, neurodegenerative problems. So Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, they seem to really be linked together. So because of that, now you're seeing much more in the terms of, you know, more articles, more importance around the sleep element because of that very problem. Because so many people wanted to have a preventative measure against those, you know, kind of very, you know, serious diseases. And now this appears to be a very clear connection. So if that's the case, you want to not only cultivate just getting your sleep time duration, but you want to get the type of sleep that brings about deep sleep. And so many people have concerns that maybe they're not getting as deep of sleep as they would like to have. And that goes back to our conversation around the light timing, the darkness timing, the meal timing, the temperature timing, all those things to help cultivate a consistent pattern of sleep and solid sleep architecture that goes through that stage that we want to have, which is that slow wave sleep. Because unfortunately, we don't see where else that janitorial system and process happens outside of that slow wave sleep. Same thing with growth hormone. So a large part of growth hormone gets released during slow wave sleep. And so if you're not getting it, then you're missing out on, you know, some of those really important functions. And we're just touching on a couple, but there's way more, you know.
Well, that's when the liver cleans itself out too. There's a lot of liver function happening exactly during that time too.
Yes. So many things. So, you know, we're just like touching the surface of some of these. When you spoke, and I almost felt hungover, brain didn't even get likely cleaned up to the level that it could. So there's actually a real physical reaction there.
There's like this brain hanging out in my brain when it didn't get to come through.
You got a dirty brain when it's...
Yeah. And then I have this extra, like probably extra stuff that needed to be filtered through my liver as well that got sort of stuck in there. I heard there's a connection between that exact same kind of plaque in the brain and sugar,
mm-hmm.
which
yes,
sleep can
glucose
really,
for sure.
Yeah. And sleep could really help with the liver function and all of those things too. Also obviously consuming less sugar, which is better for your sleep, right?
Yes.
And is better for your liver function and also helps to not collect extra plaque in your brain Nobody exactly. wants, yeah. Nobody wants brain plaque. Brain plaque is bad.
Nobody wants that. Absolutely. I know I'm talking to I'm speaking with a doctor on the podcast they're on today, and going in, she's, you know, a specialist in, keto, but also measuring, you know, the impact of, you know, continuous glucose monitoring and seeing what comes up, during our sleep, if those things are all very unstable. So when you do see, I mean, it's just mind blowing to think about, okay, so if I didn't get the amount of sleep that I was going to, or that I have gotten, how that even impacts your body's ability to handle that sugar that you might have, whether it's a piece of bread, whatever it is. And so actually the impact on your body is, more heavily felt. And then of course, when we don't get our sleep, all kinds of things happen. Oh, even the hormones around leptin and ghrelin get all thrown out of whack. So then we are more ravenous. We make often poor choices.
Yes.
So my more, you know, controversial state is that in order to have great and healthy look is at your circadian rhythm and at your sleep, and, you know, having that kind of like Maslow hierarchy that so that you want to take on, because then, you know, versus say, because many people it's like, oh, I'm going to get healthy, so I'm going to work out, I'm going to eat right, blah, blah, blah. And those things are wonderful and so important. And they actually are very important and play a role in the type of sleep we get. When you don't get enough sleep, what are the things that get cut? Oh, I can't make it to the gym. Oh, you know, just whatever, screw it, have the candy bar, have the whatever fun thing. But also your body is biologically is craving that sort of quick hit of energy. And so what is one of the quickest hits of energy we can get is sugar. So, you know, it's just setting ourselves up for a more difficult period of decision fatigue to try to force ourselves to do the right things when you're already, your tank isn't full, you know, from the get-go. So yeah, it's a really interesting area. And then once we start bringing some power and awareness that, oh my goodness, my own behaviors that I might not even, you know, not even from a place of like, oh, I know I shouldn't be doing X, but I'm doing, like, many of these people aren't even cognizant of, you know, when it comes to light. You know, when I talk to people about the fact that one of the best things you can do is start your morning outside with morning sunlight and how that will impact your sleep. People are like, wait, what, how does that even connect? You know, doing that one process can actually help align your circadian rhythm from the get-go and can help produce vitamin D, because the suprachiasmatic nucleus that I spoke about, that's connected through, you know, the optic nerves. So that light through the eyes, so not wearing sunglasses, not being behind a window, any of that sort of stuff, no hats, all those things. Like really getting that sunlight is incredibly important. And of course, you know, morning sun is very different than midday sun. And, you know, there's a whole thing that comes up with that. But, you know, being mindful of the same way if you travel, one of the recommendations is to get outside in the morning and get the sun on the schedule of your new place that you're in, and making the connection that doing that in our own environment day in, day out will keep us on that really strong and robust circadian rhythm that we're looking to build.
Okay. So now you're wearing this very interesting ring, and you mentioned it before. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that one is basically like, so this is the Oura ring. It's Oura, no affiliation. They're just awesome. And, but you know, of course there's limitations. It's consumer grade tech. It's not a polysonogram. There's going to be things that are not going to be as ideal. I tell people not to actually get into the offer sleep stages on there. And those are only kind of a guess. You can really, to get true sleep stages, is kind of need, as of right now, at least EEG readouts, and there's a whole other process for that that's not quite there yet for consumer grade products. But however, it can give you a nice readout and understanding of one, kind of an automated sleep diary, because they are pretty good at sleep timing. So when you fall asleep, when you wake up, and often wake ups in between. I've had clients that have actually discovered they have sleep apnea through using them, which is really interesting.
Wow.
You know, of course, they have to do further
testing.
They keep
waking up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the clue.
Yes, that. And then also the respiratory rate. So then, you know, there's kind of standard respiratory rates, but they were falling outside of that. And then also, as far as overall health and well-being, HRV, heart rate variability, is a really fantastic marker to understand the functionality of our central nervous system. So how both stressed psychologically and physically we are. Mm-hmm. And also arguably environmentally, you know, poor air quality, mold, all those sorts of things. So there's a lot of elements that can impact act those readings, as well as right in the arc of your heart throughout your night, because it's a, you know, nocturnal based kind of wearable. And then there's other ones, of course, as well. One of the reasons I like the Oura Ring for this conversation is it's, you know, really fully focused on sleep, and it can very elegantly start to help people to make up the link between how their much their behaviors impact their sleep. So once people start getting these, it's often drinking kind of goes out the window for most people, because you see that your heart, your temperature goes so high.
Yes, and then so high, but you're too warm to fall asleep, right?
Yes, and exactly.
Your body's, I was going to ask you about that too, but I want to ask you one other thing. Like the ring is, it's hooked up with an app or something?
Yes, it's hooked up with an app. So there's sensors inside, and then it goes to your phone, to your smartphone. And actually,
like
now
they
have a large scale study that's getting on. So you can charge it. So there's like a little charger, and you put it on the charger, and then you only have to charge it maybe like once a weekish, something along those lines. They recently just got linked up and got a lot of press because now they're engaged in a study to help spot COVID if you are wearing this, because you can, I've definitely used it to spot when I've gotten sick before. Uh-huh. And you can, for women, our infradian rhythms, which relate to the rhythms of our cycle, then you can spot that because you see the cyclical body temperature. But for sickness, you'll see your HRV often tank, and you'll see your heart rate often go up, and you'll see your body temperature often go up. Mm-hmm. Respiratory rate will, you know, deviate from its baseline. And then of course, you know, it's often some sort of impact on your sleep, whether wake ups or, you know, sleeping longer, depending on what's happening with your sleep. So it can be really, really interesting and helpful. But the whole conversation around sleep as a skill is that so much of this is about behavioral change as well. And so how challenging is behavioral change often? But if you get the biofeedback element, then you see in black and white, oh my God, I play a role in these results.
Yes, this is a direct result of something that I did.
Yes.
I ate dinner and then crashed.
Yes.
And I didn't sleep well that night, and that's my fault.
Yes, which is so empowering at the same time.
Because
even though it kind of sucks to be like, oh, geez, at the same time, you're like, wow, wait a minute. Now
I can control this.
Yes, exactly.
This doesn't just happen to me. I'm not just a bad sleeper. I eat too late in the day.
Yes.
Which
100%, and it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yes, which then begs the question, how many hours before bed do you advise people to be done eating?
That's a great question. A nice guideline is something called circadian rhythm intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And all of that is just like this fancy terminology for that we largely eat within sunrise and sunset. And there's actually apps to help facilitate that. So one's called Zero, and it will geotag you wherever you are in the world. And then, you know, basically show you how often, to gamify it, make it fun. So it's kind of like, oh shoot, this last week I ate outside of sunset time, you know, three times in a row or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it can kind of help you come back on schedule. Now, of course, there are exceptions. You know, I'm working with some clients in Sweden. So they're dealing
That's
with
different
abnormalities. Right. There's different things. But largely, you're looking to maintain within that kind of standardized sunrise, sunset. And then depending on your stress levels and what have you, some of my more biohacker clients like to bring in a longer fast, and then they'll see an impact on their sleep. So what that will look like is they might stop eating at 2 p.m. And then at 2 p.m., that gives you a longer period of time for the whole body to then not have to be dealing with all that it's dealing with when you're sleeping. And then that can support quality sleep. And if you think about it, if we go back to that kind of template of how life likely was before the light bulb, before we're indoor living, you know, you only had a certain amount of hours of daylight. And so during that time, you would hunt, cook, eat, and then
all the active things.
And so then once the sun set, you likely weren't, because you can't really hunt in the dark. So, and there's no really refrigerators. So you aren't doing much of that past the night. And actually, if you have a strong and robust circadian rhythm, it's meant to sort of downshift and downregulate those satiety hormones so that we aren't being as distracted with, you know, wanting to eat something at night. And if you are finding that some of your strongest hunger hormones are happening at night, it's a really good sign that things can be a little out of whack with your circadian rhythm. I mean, that's a thing you might want to take more seriously. And probably if that's the case, then the stool issue is likely out of whack too. So
probably.
Yeah.
Yes. So
it all works together.
Yes. So now, okay. So I'm very enthralled by your Oura Ring.
Yes.
Yeah. And I have to mention, I know that light bulbs are probably going on. So a client just told me, I hate writing logs. I hate, like, are you going to make me do a food log? Because I hate doing that shit. And before this Oura Ring, that's the kind of thing we would have been doing. We would have been monitoring these things to have data. You monitor it yourself, right? You're taking your temperature, you're seeing what time it is when you do this, and like actually paying attention actively and writing all that stuff down. But with this ring, you don't have to do that. You just put on the ring and you let it go and you look at the data later on and you can totally geek out on that shit as much as you want. And you didn't have to spend the time or the energy to do the annoying part of like taking your temperature, looking what time it is when you wake up and when you go to bed and when the sun got up that day and all that stuff.
Yes.
It's just all there for you. That's amazing.
It's amazing. And on your end, you know, because the coaching platform is that, so for me, I can tap in and I can see every single day, every client that I'm working with, like an ESPN rundown. It's like color coded and all the things of, Cindy's off the rails. Like we got to kind of rein her in, or yay, you know, William is doing incredible. We got to celebrate, you know, all that he's doing and blah, blah, blah. So it can really help provide accountability and partnership. And also just the observer effect, which is really so powerful of when, you know, when we're observed, we often conduct ourselves differently.
Because also when you're logging it yourself, you can lie.
Yes. You can totally lie.
You can totally lie. With this thing, it doesn't lie.
No.
And you'll be like, no, I know I went to bed at 9 o'clock last night. And your ring is like, no.
Yeah, exactly. It really does change the game. Totally.
But compare that to like, do you have any clients who use like a Fitbit?
Not as much Fitbit. I have, so most of the people that are coming to me, they are, well, it does vary, but so some of them are either really more attuned to their body. So they're using things like Whoop is another popular one, the WHOOP. So that one's great for my athletes. So the athletes really like that one because it does a lot for their workouts and fitness throughout the day and then has that whole nocturnal element. And then, you know, so there's a few other ones that, you know, Apple Watch has capabilities, but it's challenging with the battery. And then Garmin is another one. Then there's ones in your head, like Dream. So, but those are tricky because, you know, the applicability of many people wearing something on their head each night.
It's just
not quite there yet. Yeah, a little hard. So there's different options. But what I've found across the board for most, and just the user interface and all of that, and being able to have the kind of the longitudinal data very easily and cleanly, that one seems to have worked pretty well. And like I said, no affiliate, anything. There's just
it's just a good product.
Just a good product, exactly. They also just got $28 million in funding just a couple of days ago. So I anticipate even more rollouts with them of interesting kind of add-ons. Yeah.
That's amazing. So I don't know if you actually answered the question when I asked, how many hours before bed do you recommend people eat?
Oh, thank you.
Is your answer kind of when the sun goes down, you stop, or is it something else?
Yeah. So great clarification. Thank you. So largely we want to align with the rhythms of nature. So I usually go as a default is being mindful of sunrise, sunset. Then another part of this lymphatic drainage is if you can really push to, you know, bare minimum is 4, but then there can be so many benefits that if you play with elements like 6 hours before bed. So if you're doing the math, then for some people that is aggressively earlier than they would normally be ending their eating, but you know, can really help cultivate a kind of early bird type mentality. But it's really just a flip-flop of how, you know, intermittent fasting has gotten a lot of press over the past few years. And it kind of just flip-flops that instead of skipping breakfast, you're what I call is linear. So you're condensing it and making it like lunch, dinner. I mean, for me, I'm addicted to that now. I know when I eat later that I'm going to feel it the next morning, which I never would have put together in the past. And I'll tell you, like, that was one of the hardest behavioral change habits to make, because I used to be obsessed with popcorn to the point that, like, nighttime popcorn was like my some sort of meditation or something, you know, just like, I've earned this, and I would get all, you know, my popcorn. And so just the fact of not having that sort of like reflexive, you know, not nonsense sort of time of eating at night, that really took something for me to knock that one. But now that it's knocked, you know, my boyfriend and I, we always do all kinds of different teas at night, and, you know, just, it's like a different ritual. And actually, you know, so now that we know how great we feel after that, it's just kind of a no-brainer for us. And then also you see the results on things like your HRV readouts, heart rate variability. So all of those things can help point to how supportive it is for the body.
You probably see the results on your waistline as well. Yes.
Yes. Yes. It really does help. And it's also, it's just simple, you know? So basically for us, we do breakfast and then our dinner. And so then we're done, and it just really works. You know, granted, it's different people, different things for different people. Women want to be particularly mindful of the timing that they're doing, because, you know, we just are more sensitive, because we have to, instead of just the circadian rhythm, we have to consider the infradian rhythm, which relates to, you know, all of these different hormones around estrogen and progesterone and cortisol, well, and how that it can impact our cortisol. So if we are dealing with a lot of stressors in our life, then, you know, certainly not extending the fast too aggressively, because you can stop it way early, you know, so just being mindful of to each person, but largely stopping earlier can be, you know, kind of mimicking how the retirees might often eat, right?
Yeah. All the old people at 4 p.m. at Denny's, yep. Right?
Totally.
Yeah.
That's what we want to do. Absolutely.
That's funny. And then do you snack too?
No. For us, we're not a lot of big snackers. And the problem with snacking is that from that insulin conversation, then that can kind of have a bit of a variability in our glucose response, you know. So it's not to say you can't ever snack, but by and large, you know, really looking to satiate yourself in each one of those meals can help make a difference, that it's not even, it's also less distracting too. You know, you're not having to think about it all the time.
Absolutely.
Like the ravenous. Because I used to live like that for so many years. Oh, what else can I get? The cabinet. Yes. Open up the cabinet, stare at it. Like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I have to a be break. I'm going to go get something to eat.
Yes.
Yeah. There are a lot of different points of view on eating and timing your eating. And I hear a lot of doctors and programs that people are on where they eat 6 small meals throughout the day. And it seems to me, and they make the argument that that keeps your blood sugar even. And it would seem to me that maybe it would keep your blood sugar even, but high and even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
And it never made sense to me. And I even tried eating like that. First of all, I don't have time to eat that many times a day. I just don't. And I don't know, I can't eat that much food. And it felt like my blood sugar was just like up all the time, and it was too much. And it feels like what you're saying, while it's not what I do, like I could try that, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot to look at about it. You know, so even starting at circadian rhythm intermittent fasting as, you know, kind of a search keyword or keyword phraseology, you know, that can be really interesting, because then you can start seeing, okay, so I can have some sort of basic guideline kind of the rhythms of nature, but then as it relates to lymphatic drainage, link ups are with that. And also it's just logical too, if we really think about it, because if our stomachs aren't having to, because digestion, I certainly never respected how much goes into the digestion and all this blood flow and all
it's
the activities.
Hard work. It's you can't be doing that while you're trying to sleep. Your body,
exactly.
Because your body like will be waking you up. It raises your cortisol when you're trying to digest things.
Exactly.
Your body's going to be like, hey, you gotta, we're moving here.
Yes. And unfortunately, the body has to then prioritize like what's important, what's not. So it's got to deal with the, you know, whatever. The, for me, it was often the big giant bag of Skinny Pop or something that I just put in it before bed. And then so dealing with all that, but then it's, we also spoke about that lymphatic drainage is supposed to be one of the first things that happens in the evening. And if it's split of its resources and its capabilities and energy output, how can it possibly do the same type of job that we're looking to have it do in all areas? If it's really taking on a large, like construction job, pretty much in your gut, so
right, you're gonna have that light sleep, and you're not gonna have the lymphatic drainage that you need, and your digestion isn't going to be the way that it should either.
Yes,
like it's gonna be split between all three of those things. It's gonna be doing all three half-assed.
Yeah.
And none of them as well as they should be. So that's why, like, I really believe you need to get your digestion out of the way.
Yes.
Before you go to bed.
And I would definitely, if you're open to that experimental mindset, like really playing with different timings. So for me, I largely stop eating in the early afternoon every single day, and it's like the best thing ever. And when I do have to, you know, there's a wedding or something you got to go do that, you know, it's a lot later. It's like, ugh. But not from the ugh, like, because you want to be like, you know, you need this active social engagement, and all those things are important to just health and life and all those things. But I know that I'll just feel not as great the next day. So plan accordingly, type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. It shifts your whole kind of perspective and your the bar for yourself of how you feel. And then you just really do get addicted to that feeling of feeling great. Mm-hmm. You know,
I totally ditto that. Before I fixed my gut health, I did not know what it was like to feel good.
Yeah.
And then once I started to feel good and I was really like eating well and I wasn't bloated all the time, then I understood what it was like to feel that way. And it was just like, I couldn't go back to feeling like shit all the time and not even being aware of it.
Yes.
Because that's where I was.
Exactly.
Yes.
So true.
Awesome. So, okay. So tell me where my listeners can find you after this, because I'm sure they're completely intrigued.
I know, this has been such a great conversation.
Yes.
So basically the big bucket is at sleepasaskill.com, and all the things basically happen at sleepasaskill.com. So one of the first areas that they can get help with is you can take a sleep assessment there, and from the sleep assessment, you can essentially then pull out, you know, get in the weeds on some of these areas that we've discussed, and then get personalized feedback on those. So that's one process. Then the other process is you can download, we're actually just adding this and that's next week, is to download an optimized bedroom. So that will be basically kind of, you know, from that biohacker perspective, some of the things that you could bring in to make a difference for your sleep. And then also the Sleep is a Skill podcast episodes are there. And every Monday I send out something called Molly's Monday Obsessions. And because clearly I'm a little obsessive. And so it was all the areas that I'm obsessing over in the area of sleep and wellness, all in one email, just with tons of resources, chock full of lots of fun, you know, issues, topics, you know, and what I'm going nuts over. So often sleep stats and, you know, really just interesting, fun stuff. And then I'm very big on the engagement with people. So people will send me their sleep stats back, and, you know, we kind of create like a whole thing there. So all those things are at sleepasaskill.com.
I love it. Thank you so much. And then I have all of your other links as well that I'll include in the show notes, Instagram and Facebook. So you guys can follow Molly there. And I want to thank all my listeners, all 10 of them. I want to thank you very much. Please tell your friends, like, subscribe, and comment so that more people can see and listen to this podcast. And I love you guys. Thank you so much, Molly, amazing, for coming and talking to me today. It was awesome.
Oh, thank you. This is a blast.
I always think that, oh yeah, I know about this stuff, and I always learn. Every single time, every guest, I'm always learning even more. And this is just such a blessing for me, this whole podcast.
I keep meeting
these great people who teach me about stuff that, you know, like my head is shrinking now.
Same.
I know. Okay. I don't know anything. Tell me. That's where I am now.
Yes. I feel you. That's a good place to be, though. Continuous student, always learning. That's awesome.
Always learning. I love it. Thank you so much, Molly. Okay.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
This podcast is sponsored by my 7 Steps to Kill Candida and Repair Your Gut online program. Check it out at lauriseely.com. Jeffrey Burkle composed our theme song and recorded the instrumentals. Johnny Edwards was kind enough to record the disclaimer at the beginning, hopefully keeping small children from ever listening to this podcast.
What's up down there?
You know you want to laugh at that.